session number 23153, reel 4.
Press the right buttons at the time, you see. It should be recording now. I hope. Anyway, we were talking about Archie, and I don't think we'll go over that again, because I think, I know more or less what you said about that.
Yes.
About sights, etc., and about what did you say? You said the high explosive was black and the shrapnel was white.
That's what I believe it was. I wouldn't swear to that even because, you know, people arguing in mass saying which is which. But I think that's what it was.
The only thing I'm worried about is the battery right now, you see, because they operate from batteries. Now we've got Archie. Now the next thing that I've got down here for August 1915 is went up in fog. The fog extended to within 80 feet of the ground. In attempting to start, was overturned. Damaged plane.
Ah, but there's a lot more before that.
Yes.
Which is not in the what's it called?
In the logbook.
Logbook.
Yes.
What happened was this. This isn't being recorded, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
What happened was this. I was a bit late for getting on patrol, and I met Darley, the fighter commander.
Yes.
And he said, "You're going to be late." And so I hurried to the aerodrome. This was at Vagallon.
Yes.
And I jumped in, put on my stuff, hat and thing, jumped into the machine. Pilot, the observer, was already in his seat. And I then had a look at the weather. It looked pretty foggy, and it took off in an instant. I was out of sight of land in an instant. I carried on, and after about 1,000 feet, I was in blue sky. But the ground was cotton wool everywhere. I continued flying up to about 6,000 feet, but at this time was frightened of getting lost. But made for the lines and counted the minutes to the lines, about 12 minutes, 60 miles an hour. And then I turned left to go up the front, so to speak, because I could see balloons sticking out of the fog, of the cloud below.
Yes.
But I didn't know whether they were German or our own, probably our own, but anyhow, I couldn't fire at them. And after a while, decided it would be safer to turn left again, back to the our side of the lines, try and find our aerodrome. But on diving down, hit the clouds again, the fog again, at about 1,000 feet, and in case I hit Amiens Cathedral, which would be a nasty, spiky place to hit, I pushed her up into the blue sky again. There's blue sky everywhere. And reached again about 5,000 or 6,000 feet, when suddenly all the cylinders stopped firing. That settled it. I said, "I'm going through now, whether it's Amiens Cathedral or anything else, this won't do. I shall have no engine to use." But for some reason, after fiddling with the controls, they all started up again. But I said, "In any case, I'm going down this time."
Was there any reason for that engine trouble?
It might have been... the magneto had got damp or something.
Yes. Everything to go off. It seems like magneto trouble, doesn't it?
Yes, I think so. But as it all came on again within a matter of seconds or minutes, I don't remember now, I came out into the sunshine by a big wood towering up on the left. But now I was able to see where I was, and I saw what appeared to be a patch of green, might be grass or something, vegetables or anyhow. I said, that'll do. I landed, because I hadn't the foggiest idea where I was. I was at a place actually called PC, P-I-S-S-Y, I think.
That's right, you mentioned it down here.
And then we got out of the machine, and I said, you stick around here while I go to find the nearest telephone. This I found not very far away, about half a mile away, and I remembered I hadn't had any breakfast, and I put my hands in my wallet, and I found I'd left that behind too, so I had no money to buy anything. But after telephoning the squadron, I managed to do that and say, I've got no money, but I want to telephone the squadron, Bertin, Bergala. They were most courteous, and everything was marvelous. And I said, I'm very hungry, but I'll see you get paid for it. But they said, oh, that's nothing. And they gave me coffee and everything else. Then I thought, my poor, wretched observer all this time, sitting by the machine, nothing to eat and so on, you see. But when I got there, I saw the usual tremendous crowd all around it. Aeroplanes were very scarce in those days, anyway. And they were bringing all kinds of things. He was eating and drinking and having a marvelous time. But I noticed that where the aeroplane was, the Vickers, there was... Do I mention the nature of the soil?
You don't meant to go that far. You say that any attempt to start was overturned, damaged.
Oh, that's all, yes.
That's all you mentioned.
Well, it was obviously clover or something like that.
Yes.
But alongside the strip of clover, what I didn't know was that the clover was growing out of very rough ground, very rough.
Yes.
On the right, it was August, remember?
Yes.
And on the right was a cornfield in full sway. We got in and got started, but the bumping over the ground of the clover blinded me by my maps coming all over my face, you see. I must have taken off my right foot a bit from the steering footwork.
These maps were in pockets, were they, inside? You say the maps came flying up.
Yes, but they were shoved over. The map was open, you see.
Oh, I see, yes.
And so this bumping and so on shut me off for the necessary seconds that I let go my right leg of it and was into the cornfield. The corn wrapped itself round the skids in such a way that it simply turned it very slowly, very quietly, and very gently onto its back. And we just crawled out. And I went to the telephone and said, I've gone and put it on its back now.
Yeah.
This annoyed the squadron commander, Dawes, very much.
I should imagine.
And he came along in the squadron car very shortly afterwards. And he was apparently much amused because he was talking to Hawker some time later when I was Hawker's flight commander. He said, oh, you've got Hugh Stanley with you. Well, I'll tell you, he turned his machine over on his back and then rang for me, and when I got there, I was about to, you could produce a blast of language, I can assure you.
Yes, I would imagine.
Yes, and and all I said...
You got out of it alive.
All I said to him was, look, there's a nice little cafe here where they got some rather good drinks. Will you come along?
Yeah.
And this seems to have amused him enormously, but he came all right. I said, what's more, I've got no money to pay for these drinks. So you're stuck with it. And he wasn't to watch you.
That really, come to think of it, wasn't it? Come and have a drink, and then he had to pay for the drink.
After about to blast me to hell, but it didn't come off.
That's marvellous.
We'll just see what that... Carry on from there.
Now, the next thing I've got mentioned down here is thunderstorms. Archid in planes, saw Zepp.
Saw?
Zepp. Zeppelin, I presume.
Oh, yes.
Can you recall that? That was in...
I know what that means. That's a counsellor.
That was at Hounslow, was it?
Yes, it must have been one of ours, you know.
No, I think this was in September 1915.
Oh, no, that's wrong, then.
That you were as fine a Vickers at the time.
Oh, yes. I was thinking of somewhere in January.
Yes, and you got here...
of 16.
Reconnaissance, Ham, Roussel, is it?
And yes, Perron. And Epehy.
Yes.
Epehy?
I'm not sure, I can't read your writing very well.
St. Quentin.
Yes, you've got Ham, Roussel, and Perron here.
Yeah.
And then you've got...
For some reason, I've got it in my head that it's St. Quentin.
But then you've got Archid in Plains and Saw Zepp. That means you saw a Zeppelin, I presume, over the lines, or in the distance.
Oh, yes. I called it a Zepp. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
It was a long cigar-shaped machine.
Because I heard about some chap who was chasing a Zeppelin, I think in the Royal Naval Air Service, and it wasn't a Zeppelin, it was a cornfield, which was a long, narrow shape.
Uh-huh.
And from the air, you know, with the haze, he saw this form low down on the horizon, and he chased it. And of course, it was a cornfield.
What was that?
Well, he thought it was a Zeppelin, but it was a shape that looked like a Zeppelin.
Ah, yes, I see. Well, I just say this is much the same.
Now, the next thing I've got down here is testing mirror reflections.
Oh, that was the very last thing I did, I think.
That was in December 1915.
Yes, the very last thing I did.
Well, one of the last things, yes.
It was in connection with mirrors and things. You had to look into it to see, but I put it down as absolute nonsense, and I said so.
But what was it involved in? Was it part of the equipment on the aircraft?
It wasn't a part of the equipment, it was simply a suggestion from somebody or the other.
What, like a rear view mirror?
You can see something coming up behind you or something.
I see.
You see. But I flew about the aerodrome and so on and looked into this. I said, I don't think this is any use at all.
Yeah. I think some of the Germans used them later on the top of their wing of their aircraft.
They had the other
pilots...
Periscope effect.
It's just a rear view mirror, really, like having a car.
Yes.
But apparently, so they can see if anyone's on the tail. Mm. But apparently, a lot of pilots said these weren't much good because the sun reflected in them and it blinded you.
Yeah.
If you were coming out of the sun, with the sun behind you, the sun was reflected directly from the mirror onto you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That is all that was.
That was that.
My last thing in 11th squadron.
Yes. Now, you went off to... 24. Well, actually, you had a bit of leave first, didn't you?
Yes, 10 days.
And then you went to 24 Squadron at Hounslow.
Yes.
Now, they had a mixture of aircraft there, didn't they?
All kinds of things, yes.
Yes, and then you were instructed for a while.
All the time, practically.
Yes.
I had to take everybody up, I think, in the what was going to be the squadron. But you see, they were looking after at Hainault Farm and other places,
yes,
Sutton's
Farm.
They had little detachments.
Yes. Two aircraft.
Zeppelins.
The two aircraft were detached and on standby all the time.
Yes, but they were not anything to do with 24 Squadron, eventually, you see.
No.
It was full of people.
Yes.
Full of various people. And some of them came simply to have instruction on the Henry, which I was giving, you see.
Yes.
And then disappeared.
Yes. Did you do any night flying at all?
I did some night flying, but I didn't actually go up after a Zeppelin.
Yes.
You were on call, you know.
Yes.
The only time that anybody did anything like that was the night that I went to London to see some show, more or less. I was off duty, you see. When I got back, I heard that there had been something going on. But I never actually went up after a Zeppelin myself.
What did you think of night flying as such?
Only night flying I did was on an Avro, I think.
And that wasn't here?
It was the 50 horsepower.
Yes. No. Yes, that was at Hounslow, was it?
That's at Hounslow.
Yes.
That's where I first met, just leaving at Smith Barry.
Yes. Now, is that, I think in January at Hounslow, you got the first DH2s
yes.
arriving.
And I don't think we were flying them for more than about 2.5 hours before we went overseas. I've read since that they're afraid they might flop into the sea or something.
Yes.
If you flew them too much. And yet, as soon as you got to France, they wanted you to go on long reconnaissances. But the weather put paid to that, luckily, because there were DH2s all over western France landing through the engine failure or something.
Now, did you find the DH2 difficult to fly?
Did
you find the DH2 difficult to fly?
I didn't, no.
You found it, but it was more lively than the other aircraft.
Much, yes. I never found the camel any difficulty either. Lots of people had a lot of trouble with camels.
Yeah, we'll come to that bit later.
It used to kill its young.
Yes, that's what I've heard, yes. Now, when you were in 11th Squadron, you never handled the gun, did you?
No,
because you were the pilot, the observer handled the gun. Now, obviously, as soon as you got on a DH2, you had a gun of your own.
Oh, yes, you had.
Did you have any special training at all,
We used to fire into a bank or something.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Did all the DH2s have guns at Hounslow? Were they fitted with guns at Hounslow? Did you practice with them?
I don't think we ever practiced with them in the machine.
No.
Only on the floor.
Yes.
Firing at petrol tins or that sort of thing.
So in fact, the guns of the DH2, the 24 Squadron, were never fired until you got to France.
That's right.
Actually in anger, probably.
They never fired in the machine.
Yes.
We never had any practice at all.
You didn't have butts, did you, at all, for the...
There was something of that nature.
Yes.
But... not actual, I don't know, petrol tins is the only thing I can think of.
So,
you set it on fire.
You didn't prop up the aircraft like they did later on in the Second World War and hold it in a flying attitude and then fire at a target from the aeroplane.
But that happened in the when we had camels later on.
Yes.
A couple of years.
But not with the DH2.
No.
Now, apparently the DH2 was a very cold machine, wasn't it?
Very.
It was colder than the Vickers.
Oh, much. It was going faster, you see.
Yes. And you found it particularly cold, I believe.
And you were a slap in the front, you see.
Yes. But you found it cold because you were quite tall.
Yes.
I should imagine that you were more exposed than some of the smaller chaps.
There was a sort of protection of some kind that you could hide behind a bit.
But you must have got a nasty draft coming through that central cutout.
Yes.
I mean, it's going right onto your chest, wasn't it? There, I should imagine, cold.
But I did. These fur-lined flying caps were very good.
But you mentioned somewhere that you had some eye trouble.
Oh, did I?
Yes, with the cold.
Yes, I should think very likely.
Yes.
But that passed out. It passed off, I should think.
Well, now what sort of flying clothes did you have at that
time? A leather jacket. In 24 Squadron.
In 24 Squadron, yes.
Yeah, a leather jacket. These thug boots,
yes,
which went up to your hips, very good. I had very good opossum-covered gloves, which I bought for myself at a shop in London, you see.
Which shop was that?
In Piccadilly.
Piccadilly.
It was famous for its that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And you could get these fur-lined goggles, too. They were very good. Because the issue ones were no use at all, in others too. But silk gloves inside these gloves. Is this thing working still?
Yes, it's working still, yes. So I'm just checking.
Silk gloves inside this possum gloves that I use. And the same with the feet, silk socks.
I heard that some pilots used to get their girlfriends to give them their silk stockings.
Get what?
Used to get the silk stockings from their girlfriends, and they used to wear those over their head underneath
I didn't have any girlfriends.
Because that kept them quite warm, you see.
That was before he met me.
I always thought that was more less like knights of old, you know, carrying a lady's favours.
Yeah.
You never heard of that sort of thing?
I can't remember it, no. Neither did I take a flask of liquor up.
No.
Some people did. But
apparently Albert bought
I thought if I can't manage without Dutch courage, it's no good.
Quite a few pilots did that. Did they carry liquor with them?
Not many, I don't think.
Was it for warming or just for, you know, Dutch courage, as you say?
Yes, well, I dare say it was a bit of both, I should think.
Apparently Albert Ball used to take some homemade cake up with him. His mother used to send him cake, and he said he never went into the air without carrying some of his mother's cake, which he used to munch when he was flying up high, you know, when he was a bit bored.
No, I never tried cake.
You didn't have much time to train on the DH2s before you went to France, as you were saying. Did you find there were a lot of accidents with the DH2 before you went? Various pilots had accidents with the aircraft?
No. I don't think they did. The only minor accidents, as a matter of fact, were the day we left on the 7th of February, which was stormy.
Yes.
And the Air Ministry was ringing up, start. In 5 minutes it said, stop. Gale over the channel or something. And it was quite a long business. But finally, we got the word to go. We then flew to.
Was it Folkestone you started from?
Yes. But it was an aerodrome outside Folkestone, of course.
Yes. Well, it's got Folkestone down here. Hands on Folkestone.
Yes, that's right.
Then Folkestone Central Mayor.
Ah. But a little time elapsed.
Yes.
Let me see, what are we talking about? 24 Squadron?
We're talking about 24 Squadron, about, you know, I'm talking about the flying training before you set off, you know.
Ah.
Obviously,
it was 11th Squadron when I was delayed.
That's right.
Several
days,
two or three days.
You told me the story of that.
I've told you that.
Yes.
So I was getting back to that one, but 24 Squadron was all right. We landed at this aerodrome here, folks. And filled up and flew over to Santa Maria, where the whole of B flight arrived safely, but Tidmarsh had not gone over on his front and bent the thing. But that was nothing. Hakowin, I believe, was blown over and had to stay for several days before he got off. But otherwise, there were not much.
Do you think the DH2 was a bit difficult to handle in gusty weather, you know, on the ground?
Yes, it was.
Because it was very light aircraft,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
So I should imagine that when you took off, say in gusty weather, you had to use the rudder a lot to keep you stop it being blown about.
Yes, you had to be rather rough with it.
Yeah.
In the same way as in the case of the, or rather considerably different, in the case of a Camel aircraft. You had to be very fierce with it on the ground, but the instant you're in the air, as delicate as possible.
Now you say with the DH2, did you used to be sort of rough with the DH2 in the air as well to make it move?
No, I don't think you wanted to be rough with it. No.
It's quite a delicate machine to handle, isn't it?
Yes.
When it's flying.
Yeah.
I mean, it responded well.
Oh yeah. But it was very slow compared to the German machines.
Yes. Apparently it says here that when you flew over, you flew in a triple formation. Does that mean you sort of went over in three waves? In flights.
Triple formation.
That's what you've got down here in your logbook. Because formation flight didn't come until later.
No, not for a long time. Months.
So, I mean, when you flew over, you saw just like a straggling group of 12 aeroplanes all flying over.
I don't understand that remark in the logbook
at all.
This is
your own remark.
Because the B flight arrived intact.
Yes.
In fact, all the pilots. But I don't think any of the other flights managed to make it.
But who led? Who led on the whole formation over? Was that Hawker led the whole lot?
No, he went by sea.
Did he?
Yes.
So each flight commander sort of was in charge of his own section?
I suppose so, yes.
Now there's another thing is about the DH2, and I suppose that, you know, you probably won't remember this, but I'm trying to give you a bit more information, you know, for this article about the DH2. Now, one of the main problems we've had is finding the location of the pressure pump for the fuel. Now, when I wrote to Andrews, he said that it was set at 45 degrees on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling that he was thinking about another aeroplane, because on the right-hand side you've got your trim quadrant. Remember that? The trim quadrant of the DH2? With a couple of springs coming off it, which put tension onto the joystick so that you can trim the aircraft out and fly hands-on.
No, I don't remember that.
And I wrote to another chap called Brearley, who flew in 29 Squadron, and he said it was mounted on the top longer.
No.
I think the dog wants to go up on here.
Oh, yes. Yes, he does. Come on, then, B.
Come on, dear. Go on, big girl. Big brave girl. Go on.
I wanted to go up just now.
Go on, up on the stool. She wants your leg there, don't she? Your
probably.
Leg there.
But,
and he said that this pump was mounted on the top longer. But I've got a feeling that it might have been mounted right inside the nose, behind the dashboard. So that you had to lean forward to pump like that. Because you were...
It's very confusing, because the Vickers had one too, you see.
Yes.
And that was certainly on the right side.
Yes.
But if it wasn't on the right side, I don't know where it could have been.
I mean...
But have you ever got onto Wilkinson?
No, I've written to him, because I didn't get a reply.
Oh, he's still alive.
Yes. I might try and write him again, actually.
Yes. Some of these points he might remember.
Yes. I know it's very difficult to remember all those years ago.
He's a very nice fellow.
I'll write him again.
I don't know why he hasn't answered your...
Well, I only wrote to him once. I mean, the letter might have got misplaced, but...
You got his address from Hawker, have you?
Yes, I got his address.
Because I can't give it to you, because I don't know where he lives.
Now,
the Air Force Club would
always
get
him. Oh yes, the Air Force Club would get
him. Now, what did you think of Hawker, actually? You know, Tyrrell Hawker, when he writes about his brother, he seems too good to be true sometimes.
Yes.
You know, I mean, obviously, the way he's writing about his brother, he thought a lot of his brother.
Yeah.
But was he highly respected by all of the squadron?
Well, I think so.
Because I've heard from somebody else that he was a little bit of a Puritan. He didn't like officers drinking, things like that.
Oh, I don't remember him saying so. I think there was some rule, not until after a certain time or something like that.
Yes, he was very strict on that. Now, when you... first went over to France, the Fokkers were still very dangerous creatures.
Oh yes, they were full of drinking.
And apparently a rule came out, I think by Trenchard, that all reconnaissance aircraft must be escorted by at least three fighter aircraft or scouts,
yes.
Or three other aircraft. And apparently you wrote in the notes you sent to Hawker that you were glad this didn't happen because you would have been involved in long reconnaissances with BEs. And apparently you were glad because the weather was so bad that you couldn't do this sort of thing.
Yes. It wasn't much of a catch, Scotty, but it had its good effects.
Yes.